Good afternoon and welcome to Tribal Campaign, the primary election 2022. And we are in Studio 91. Well, staff is Michael Heminger is engineering, and I'm in here at the seat of the host. We were talking to the candidates for Campbellfield. Everett Colgrove Jr. is the incumbent, and the candidates are Michael T. Hostler and Marin Inker McCovey Sr. And we are trying to make connections by phone with Michael Hostler. Okay. Through the technology of at least the basic telephone, we're trying to patch him into the studio. And we have sent out the letters to invitations to all of the candidates running in this election, primary election. And those seven questions that were changing the format of the campaign program for this primary season. And coming up with giving you an idea of, well, who these people are. And once we get the candidates who advance to the general election, then we'll bring them in for another round of discussions. Interest. Hello, Mike. Oh, okay, you're back on the air. So I was just explaining how we're operating this. And in the general election, the candidates will be able to address the issues that they have mentioned in any campaign letters that they had sent out. And if they didn't send out a campaign letter, well, talk about what it is that you would have sent out if you did send out a letter. So there's just a way to get things, inform the people about who the candidates are. And in this round, we'll talk about quality of life issues. Taking a look at a consensus building type of a format where we get to know one another and talk about how we think and how we see things and how we feel about that. And we'll get into more of the discussions as the questions go down. So if you may have a copy.
Joe, I'm having a difficult time hearing you.
Okay. Is this any better, Michael?
That seems better, yes.
Okay. You may have tuned me up a little bit there. Michael Hostler, candidate for the Campbellfield District. You are on the radio through Studio,
okay.
Studio 91. So, yes, thank you for answering the letter and be willing to take part in this. So
absolutely.
What I was envisioning happening is, well, all three candidates would be a part of this discussion, and we would go down to the list of the seven questions. And there would be no response. No feedback. You know, just let people hear what you have to say, your opinion. And we just go around the number of candidates, and each question would start out with a different candidate and end with a different candidate. So nobody's always in first and always last. So was the plan. But right now, you're the one who showed up. It's 4:04, so I was just stalling around a little bit. Maybe we get another call, but so far we haven't. So
okay.
So once again, thank you for being here.
And my pleasure.
So we could start off, the purpose of this format is to let the listeners and the audience hear your human side, your thoughts based upon your values. And the first question is, what is the quality of life in Hoopa and how do you feel about it? So that would be the first question. So give you a sample. If I was asked this question, I would say I think the quality of life in Hoopa is really good. You know, I've lived in the cities. I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it just got to be too much of a hassle and too much confusion. Just too many people, too much traffic, and I've always liked, we come up here in the summertime and visit with my grandma, and we had, she had land down where the Mill Creek, on Mill Creek, where the, right where the, that plant used to be, that timber mill used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, before that, that was her allotment. And so we were right there on Mill Creek. And so we'd come up there, and my folks would go trout fishing up Mill Creek. And back then, Highway 96 was just a gravel road. They haven't built the bridge yet. So we'd be walking, me and my mom would be walking down that gravel road there to visit my aunt, or her aunt, my great aunt. And I told her, you know, I was about 5 years old. I said, one of these days I'm going to move here. I really like these mountains. And so what, 30, 25 years later, I did. So it just struck me that the quality of life here is so much better here than it is in Alameda. So it just happened that way. And sure. How I feel about that, I've been here like 40 years, maybe 41 years, and I think I've made the right choice. It feels really good to be here, and yes, there's some difficulties, but there's difficulties around the world too. So, but I think that we can resolve our issues if we just open up communications and listen, do some deep listening, and get to understand people. And we can overcome a lot of things, but we have to do it together. So that's why I think the quality of life here is really good. I think people do talk with one another. And that's how I feel about that. And I think what I want to do also is go ahead into question two. What would be the worst possible outcome if we did not start talking about the quality of life in Hoopa? Things would continue to be troublesome. We wouldn't solve things. We would keep moving over the same ground, and things could get far worse than what they are without them ever getting much better. So that's what I would like for you to address, is question one and question two.
Okay.
Would you like me to repeat those?
I definitely can address those. And, you know, the quality of life, I think, is definitely one that is unsurpassed by anywhere I've ever lived. Now, that is relative to me and my situation, and I believe that, you know, in the position that I'm in as a candidate, that I know that not everyone's quality of life is the same, and everybody's perspective is different. Now, coming from my perspective, what I see is that maybe my quality of life is different than others, and that, you know, we do have a beautiful valley. We have many things that aren't available to us outside of Hoopa. You know, we have the river, we've got the mountains, we've got, you know, our culture and our community, and it's, you know, close, and we all know each other for the most part. At least we know who each other's families are, and we have a connection, you know, culturally and through community. And so in that aspect, I believe that, you know, quality of life can be great. However, you know, like you said, the world has many challenges. And some of those challenges are creating, you know, the opportunities for everyone in the valley to believe that the quality of life there is good. And that, you know, we look at those people in our community who may not feel that way, and uplift those people and create opportunity, create a better sense of community to help these people who are in need. And, you know, my great-grandfather Jimmy Jackson always said that, you know, help your neighbor, find somebody every day that you can help. You know, it doesn't have to be a lot, it doesn't have to take money, but, you know, help them out, give them a hand, pack their groceries out to the car, you know, uplift somebody. So, you know, that's something that, you know, we were always taught, is to, you know, help out when we can. And I think that, you know, looking at this from the candidate perspective, that we have a lot of opportunity as a tribe. And we have an opportunity to create a better quality of life for the people that live in our community, our tribal members, non-tribal members for that matter. And it's really concerning to me that we don't have these conversations and that we don't talk about the horrible side of things that, you know, may create a poor quality of life for people. I know of an elder right now who doesn't have electricity, doesn't have running water, doesn't have appropriate plumbing, sleeping on their porch. And this is an elder in our community. And, you know, and I know of other tribal members who, you know, have porta potties in their front yard, and that person's quality of life doesn't seem to be the same as ours. And I think that having those conversations and coming up with, you know, a strategy and a plan to make sure that our people aren't living in that way is important. And the only way we can do that is by talking about it. And if we don't talk about it, then we're only going to continue to have the problems unsolved and continue these dysfunctional ways. I mean, the tribal government is assimilated to the United States government. And the United States government is founded on capitalism. And so the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And our government seems to have followed suit in some of those ways where, you know, the people in the top are getting the lion's share. The people, you know, that are, you know, our tribal members are getting what's left over. And really that mentality needs to change. And we need to uplift our tribal members to a place where they have the same opportunities. They have the same, you know, abilities, and that we give them the tools, not necessarily a handout, but a hand up. And so talking about those things, having, you know, community meetings and bringing the people back to the table and giving them ownership in how we move forward as a community, how we move forward as a tribe, and really showing that that is sincerely our mission, I think is important. So that's my, and how I feel about this, that, you know, I feel that it saddens me that there are those aspects to our community, and a lot of communities have those aspects, but I believe we have the ability to change those things and to prioritize. I think it starts with, you know, community strategic planning and having a general plan for our tribe to move forward in a direction that is going to help everyone. Identifying those elders in our community that need help. You know, traditionally our elders have, you know, received payments from the tribe that come from timber. And as we all know, timber's not going to be around forever. So we need to find ways that we can subsidize that and create a good wraparound system for our elders so that they don't fall through the cracks. And so that, you know, we don't have elders sleeping on the porch when in the wintertime with no running water. You know, it saddens me. It really does. But I do feel hopeful, and I also feel like it's possible, and I don't feel like it is insurmountable.
Very good. Thank you. So I heard you say that Upa is the best place that you have ever lived. You can compare that to any community you ever lived in, and it is the best, and you feel that other people or have that same similar experience, and that, we have our difficulties like everybody else around the world, but we are a tight community, and that you feel that if we talk about these things, talk about the quality of life, we can solve some problems. And
absolutely.
So that's what I heard you say in essence, and just let you know that you've been heard.
And thank you.
So that's how we normally do the consensus, and then we move on. Now, you talked about the worst possible outcomes, too. You said if we don't talk about it, we're not going to solve much, and people are going to continue to suffer. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, the third question is, what would be the best possible outcome if we did start talking about the quality of life in Upa?
Well, coming from a planning background, I can definitely tell you that just talking about an issue is never enough, but it is a start. And talking about the issues is very important. And what is the best possible outcome from talking about something? It's the next steps. It's the action. It's the development. It's the implementation to get to a goal, to see that final product. And I think ultimately, you know, if we don't talk about it, we never identify the problem. We never identify a solution. We never identify an action item or a next step to implement. And I think many times that we as a tribe, we've had so many plans, so many great ideas, but we fail sometimes in moving forward into the action and implementation phase for one reason or another. And it's one thing that I really have pushed forward with a positive mindset in this election campaign of, it's not one person's fault. It's not one person's problem. It's not one person's idea that's going to solve everything. We need to come together as a community. We need to talk about it. We need to have buy-in from the community. We need to move forward into the next steps and action. And then we need to follow through with those actions into implementation. And once we see that implementation, then we're going to see the fruits of those talks come to light. And I think that is the best possible outcome from talking about it, is the actual implementation and achieving the goal. But there too often we talk and we talk and we talk, and there's not any action. And, you know, many times we see that, you know, in federal government politics, we see it in local, county, state, in tribal politics. And being a tribal council member only gives you one vote. It only gives you one voice. So you can talk about it, but what can tribal council members do on their own to implement action? You know, we talk about transparency. We talk about, you know, these things that, you know, when we campaign, but what is the action item? The action item is, what are we really going to do, and what can we do, you know, from a council elect perspective? And that is, you know, being available, holding your own meetings with your district and all districts. You know, to me, you know, talking about it means there's different ideas in Campbellfield for Campbellfield District. There's different ideas in Nortonfield and Mesquite Field, Hosser Field, Bald Hill, all those districts. But we all have family that live in all of these districts, and so we really need to take this from a, you know, say 30,000 foot level and look at it, the large picture, and we bring all the tribal members in, give them the buy-in, and produce, you know, discussion that creates action items that will move to implementation, because I think that's the solution. And that's the best possible outcome, of the implementation of those goals from the talks.
Thank you. Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on to four, talking about issues. In your opinion, what contributes to the carbon footprint of Hoopa Valley, and what would you think are the most common elements we use that contributes to the global carbon release?
Well, I mean, for those that are familiar with the carbon footprint and what that means, I really don't want to rehash, but educating those listeners maybe on what a carbon footprint is essentially just the carbon emissions from fossil fuels, combustion vehicles, power plants that are powered from, you know, fossil fuels, et cetera. And one of the most common that is overlooked is actually our wood fireplaces and stoves and wood stoves that heat our homes. You know, propane fuel powered items and whatnot. And so looking at what our current carbon footprint of the valley is definitely something that we need to be aware of and we need to take a look at. But I would in my personal opinion, without having any statistics or studies in front of me, right out the gate, obviously, are vehicles. You know, the tribe has X number of vehicles within the tribe that they utilize. We have logging equipment. We have logging trucks, dump trucks, you know, heavy diesel equipment. And a lot of times, this equipment is not what is called CARB compliant. And that's the California Air Resource Board. And recently, the California Air Resource Board just mandated to have clean emissions from all vehicles. And there was some forgiveness given to, I think, our area because of the amount of trees we have. And so we have, you know, what's called carbon credits. So we have trees that clean the air and clean the emissions in our area. And so that offsets our actual carbon footprint. And so many times the tribe, because we do not have to comply with these sorts of regulations all the time, we may buy generators that are no longer CARB compliant, that are tier one generators rather than tier four CARB compliant generators, or tier two dump trucks or heavy equipment that doesn't have this, is not outfitted with the same equipment that cleans the emissions so that we don't contribute to the greenhouse gases that affect our atmosphere. And so being aware and educating in our community, I think, is very important behind that carbon footprint. And as we see the gas prices climbing right now due to, you know, what's going on in our world, it's even becoming more of a glaring subject, because what we can do and what we should do is look towards clean energy sources, environmental friendly vehicles, and really becoming a leader in that area, you know, in the tribe, where we can, you know, how do we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions from our vehicles? You know, do we move to electric vehicles for those vehicles that are on daily use around the valley? You know, there's new electric trucks coming out. There's all kinds of options. But then, of course, those things cost money. And, you know, our budgets are, you know, at an all-time high, where our funding sources are becoming more scarce. And so looking at how we can reduce that on a daily basis in other areas is very important. You know, car compliance is something I'm familiar with when I was working at the roads department, and we had to deal with our trucks and reporting on our vehicles and our registrations, and knowing, you know, where that goes. But I also don't want to sound like, you know, I may know more about this than I really do, and it is definitely a subject that I need to be more educated on, as well as, I believe, in educating our community. But how we reduce that and how we contribute to it are definitely in those ways. I think that looking at all those options, and again, you know, this goes right back to developing a tribal general plan and strategy, you know, long-term strategy for how we move forward in the next 10 and 20 years, so that we can sustain, you know, our valley, we can sustain our air quality, we can sustain our forest, and, you know, sustain our government by reducing costs through the same methodology.
Thank you. Moving on to the next question. In your opinion, what can people in Hoopa do to reduce our collective carbon footprints?
A collective carbon footprint. Well, you know, we could definitely, there's a few things. You know, if the tribe was to create a walkable community and created, you know, a community that lended to bicycle and pedestrian traffic, that we could do a lot more walking and a lot more, you know, bicycle movement. Maybe we create a courier system, you know, of people who want to, you know, deliver mail in that way. I mean, these are all kind of, you know, ideas that happen in the city already. I mean, there's, you know, I was in the city in 2013 with my daughter when she was in the hospital for 6 months, and you saw couriers all over the place on pedal bikes delivering stuff left and right. And it was a faster mode of transportation because traffic was so thick in a metropolitan area like that. You know, in the valley, you know, individuals can definitely look at reducing their carbon footprint, you know, by maybe driving less, maybe, you know, making less trips downtown. Is that plausible? I'm not sure. But I mean, those are the obvious solutions in my mind, on an individual basis. And, you know, looking at, you know, how we heat our homes and utilizing solar power is definitely one way to heat our homes. However, in the wintertime, sometimes it's unavoidable when we have older homes that aren't set up to have some of these amenities such as, you know, solar power. It may not be possible, but looking at maybe reducing the amount of time that you have a wood fire burning, the amount of time you're in a vehicle on a daily basis, that's really about all I can think of for that question.
Very good. Thank you. Well, what needs to be done to help people meet their willingness to reduce our collective carbon footprint?
I think ultimately it's education and educating our community on what their current carbon footprint is. And I know that there's some websites out there that, you know, you can take a small quiz and you know, ask you how many miles a week do you drive and what kind of vehicle do you drive and how big is the engine and, you know, do you have a wood stove, do you have propane furnace, and do you have a kerosene furnace? And, you know, they ask questions so you can kind of test your own carbon footprint. And I think that, you know, that's one solution is the education and having people kind of taking a look behind that, but also taking a look at the overall effects. I believe that global warming is real, and I glean that from the job that I have currently and working for Red Plains Professional as a project manager and seeing the effects of some of our clients in Alaska where they're losing, you know, a foot to 2 feet a month of land because glaciers are melting. And it's pretty simple science. You know, when an ice cube starts to melt, that means the ambient temperatures are higher than the temperatures that it takes to keep the ice cube frozen. And so when these icebergs that are melting have been frozen for, you know, hundreds of years, and now they're starting to reduce and water levels are rising, affecting these, you know, Alaskan communities and tribal communities at that, it becomes very real. And how that effect is going to occur in Hoopa is not something that I can comment on. I'm not sure how, you know, global warming is going to affect us, but we do see the rise in temperatures in our water. We do see the rise in temperatures, you know, at the lake. We're in drought season, you know, in this era that we're in right now where we have very little, you know, rain coming back and filling our lakes and streams. Snowpack is at a minimum. And so, you know, those I think are the immediate effects that we see from global warming. And, you know, reducing our carbon footprint in those ways, I think, will help, you know, to combat that. Even though we're one small community, we can also be a leader nationally in that arena by doing, you know, some of the things that we talk about and investigating those ideas and maybe coming up with other ideas that can help reduce our carbon footprint.
Very good. Thank you. And the seventh question is just listed as an adaptive learning question. And that is, how did you feel about this interview? And what did you learn that would help you be a successful council member for the tribe in the community?
I think that, you know, the interview to me is important. It's important to let people know that we're all human. We all, you know, come from the same place, essentially, or at least we all live in the same place. You know, and even if those tribal members are off reservation, I think that we have a common thread, and we're all Hoopa people. And we carry a deep love for where we come from and who we are. and we're a proud people. And, you know, what I've learned, I think, today is that, number one, that it's important to show up. It's important to be open and honest to the membership about what's occurring, being open-minded to learn. And it's okay to not know everything. It's okay to comment on what you know and give your opinion, but it's also important to sit back and also listen to the membership as to what their thoughts and their needs and their struggles. You know, again, this is my opinion. I don't pretend to know anything about any subject other than what I've learned, and I'm willing to be open-minded and learn more. And so really today in this interview, really was looking forward to having the other candidates on the forum and hearing their thoughts and ideas, because I believe that we can learn from one another. And so I guess the biggest takeaway for me today is that, you know, if nothing else, the one thing I can do that's going to make me a better councilman and to be able to serve the Hoopaw people is, you know, show up, to be present, and to share the thoughts and the discussions and be open-minded.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for taking part in this. As I mentioned in the bottom of the invitation to all of the candidates, you still have an opportunity to make arrangements with the station manager for another campaign. If you still want to use KIDE as a campaign tool, that is an option. And tomorrow we're going to have the invited candidates are from Mortonfield District. There's four candidates there. And we'll see how that goes as well. So thank you, Michael Hoster, candidate for the Campbellfield District. And it was a pleasure talking with you, and wish you the best of luck.
Absolutely, Joe, and I thank you for the opportunity, and I'd like to thank the tribal members and appreciate your support in the upcoming election.
Okay, well, thank you. This has been the primary election 2022 campaign program of KIDE. The engineer for this program has been Michael Hemminger, station manager, station operation manager. I'm Joseph Orozco, lead producer. We thank you for listening.